God, it's episode 16.
What? 6-0.
This is Anna.
Anna Shireen.
Yeah, you
Shireen.
Are.
I'm Shireen.
Yeah,
I'm
Shireen.
I am Shireen.
You are Shireen.
Okay.
Oh my God. In this episode, we are going to talk about how the sanctions on Iran are strangling the country and its economy.
And on a lighter note, we're going to also talk about China having 1 million Muslims in detention centers, aka concentration camps, and it's a great time.
And then we're going to end with talking about all the Middle Eastern desserts we grew up with and how everything has pistachios on it.
Yep, we love our nuts. Stay tuned.
Who are we? Where do we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Hi.
Hi.
It's Anna.
It's Shireen.
Oh, no.
We're back.
Oh, no.
Guess what episode it is. Do you know?
60.
Yeah! The
For
big
once
6-0.
In my life.
We're senior citizens.
We're senies.
I guess we were senior citizens at 55, right? I don't know.
I don't know.
But we're definitely senior citizens now.
We're senior cities.
We can get discounted meals at the hometown buffet.
We can?
Yeah, right? You're senior citizens. Can you get discounted stuff everywhere?
I guess.
Movie tickets?
Oh, movie tickets for sure.
Yeah.
Speaking of Zach, do you want to go see a movie tonight? Oh my God. Zach's a cat. I know probably that wasn't the greatest time to deal with this house cleaning, but you know, sometimes that I have to ask when I remember, I won't remember at all.
Yeah. Yeah. You mean you just, it's in your head, you got to say it before it goes away again, you know?
Oh, good times.
How's your week?
Oh God.
Oh no.
No, I'm just joking. It was fine. I started keto. It's hell.
Mm.
Yesterday was the worst day of my life. It was day two. I'm on day three now. When you hear this, hopefully I'll still be on it. Only on like day whatever that day is. Yesterday was fucking hell. Yesterday I felt like my entire body had no, like, there was just no movement going on.
Oh.
Like, I woke up. I didn't know where I was. I was in bed. Apparently day two is very hard because your body's detoxing from everything really hard. Or whatever, the like, first couple days. And that was fucking hell. Apparently my body's addicted to sugar. It was like, please, master, one more cookie.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, I can't.
He's like, come on, master, heat it up on a spoon and let's just shoot it straight up.
Oh, on a spoon.
Yeah, that took like a heroin.
Dark turn. Yeah, like, you're going to say paper towel in the microwave or something.
It was a heroin cookie.
Yep.
So I didn't. I stayed strong. It was very hard. I've only eaten really salads and whatever keto approved meals, which is fucking bullshit. Keto's bullshit. You don't get to eat anything.
I'm not really the biggest proponent of a keto diet, but you already know this.
Who is? This is trash.
I've only known one person that is like if you're into keto, you're into keto. Like, you will let everyone know that you are like
thriving.
That's
the problem. It's like, your whole fucking world becomes like trying to remember not to eat carbs.
Yeah.
Like, you're just like being like, oh, why am I reaching for that piece of bread? I can't have that.
Like, I thought being a vegan was high maintenance. Then I worked with this guy that was on a keto diet and I was like, I'm a fucking walk in the park compared to you.
It fucking sucks.
Yeah.
Let's see how long. I'm trying to last 21 days. Oh, maybe I'll last 2 weeks.
I mean, I think it might get better with time.
It's slowly getting better.
Yeah, you can try to like find foods that work that you wouldn't have thought of before.
Yeah, I made a whole list. I'm going grocery shopping after this.
Okay.
But it's actually interesting because, so yesterday, during all this hell, I was like, I couldn't keep my eyes open.
Yeah.
Like, I was just like, my head was just droopy. I'm an idiot. And then I'm like, yeah, I already have this 3-mile hike plan, so I might as well go.
Anna!
Oh my God. I don't know why I thought this would be a good idea.
Anna!
But I was like falling asleep in the car on the way to the hike. And then like got on the hike. I'm like, just keep walking. I get to my friend's place to meet to go to the hike. And I realized I forgot all my hiking gear.
Oh my God.
Which I packed and left ready for me to take in the morning. But I was so out of it in the morning that I was like,
no.
The whole time that I was thinking, what am I forgetting?
Right.
It was like actually things like, I know I'm supposed to be carrying something else, but my brain was like, just go to work. And so I did it. And then on this hike, I was just like one foot after the other. Don't fall over.
Did your friend notice that
Oh, she knew, like, all along that I was a mess. Like, literally, she'd be like, okay, so clearly you're not capable of responding to any... Like, I couldn't really talk and hike at the same time.
Okay,
like,
how is this... Were you... Maybe you're not eating enough of the good... Of the keto-approved
food. It was just the second day, so my entire body... That's apparently what happens. Like, oh, you go through, like, withdrawal of carbs, so your body's trying readjust to burning fat instead of carbs to, like, survive. Uh-huh. So is this... I did not mean to make this health podcast. I'm 100% against this,
you guys.
Now I don't know why I'm doing
this. Health.
I don't suggest anyone does it. I don't know why I'm doing it. I'm just trying to change my eating habits and make my stomach smaller. Because as a stoner for years, I have eaten way too much. In the last... Last year, I've gained 12 pounds. I finally measured myself again, or weighed myself, and 12 pounds apparently looks like 80 pounds. And now I'm like horrified. And so I'm going to try this thing.
I do want to remind you that you were hiking a lot last year, and muscle weighs more than fat.
True.
And so,
but I stopped hiking because I was working full time all of a sudden. So my entire life, like, and then all of a sudden I was just sitting at a desk all day, which I wasn't really doing before. Before I was laying in bed working, but I was also at the same time getting up and doing things and like being able to just go out and make my own schedule.
Yeah, you were hiking every day for a while. I was very impressed.
Yeah, man, what a life I used to live. And now I'm on keto.
Well, I think it can work for you. It may not, but either way, it's a challenge and you can see what your body is capable of. And I mean, either way, regardless of what dietary things you're on, I think limiting sugar is a good thing. Like, no sugary drinks or no processed sugar. Like, just get your sugar from fruit.
The funny thing is, last night I got home, surprised I could make it home, took a shower. After the shower, I was like, just go lay in bed, you don't have a chance. I smoked some weed, and then I couldn't walk. After I smoked weed, that was it. Like, my body was like, and you fucked up. You shouldn't have added weed to the situation.
No.
I just, like, kept, because my body was already so tired from the hike. And then, you know, the fatigue of trying to change my entire system. Then I smoked weed and I got up at one point to pee. And I wasn't sure I was going to make it. Like, there was, like, I was just walking so slowly and my legs were aching. And I was, like, I felt like I was going in slow motion. I remember, like, Zach was talking to me and I was like, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. I just couldn't do anything.
Wow.
Like, anyway, but I woke up at 7 a.m. this morning with the most energy I've ever had in my life. So that was weird. I went and peed so hard in the morning. Like, I was like, whoa, I feel good. But I don't know. We'll see how it goes.
Do you ever have those dreams? This is a different subject entirely.
Food dreams? Yes.
No. Oh. As a kid, if you like, you have to go pee and then you had like, imagine that you did. And then
you peed yourself?
Yeah.
I have, yes.
Yeah. I just remember that happening to me.
I don't do it as much anymore. I think I've.
I said as a kid.
I'm peeing.
But it
right
just
now.
Reminded me of the, of my trauma. but yeah, I mean, good luck on your journey.
Thank you.
People are annoying to me being vegan, so I'm sure people can get annoying. I mean, even I was trying to give you like unsolicited advice, so my
everyone bad. Around me feels like everyone I know so far has done keto once.
Really?
Except for you. Yeah.
I think I already have one thing going on. Yeah. I don't need to add another. But also, I think keto is very meat heavy from what I noticed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which my body's not used to, so we'll see how that goes. Yeah. I can't eat tofu. That's like all I eat. And now I can't eat it anymore.
Yeah,
so we'll
I could never. Veggies and tofu.
But I did go to Chipotle for lunch and have a completely keto meal.
Oh.
Because I just didn't do any rice or beans.
You just got meat and lettuce and like...
Yeah, meat, lettuce. Like, I can have sour cream, which is so wild.
Because
you can have heavy creams. It's the weirdest
diet. Oh, because it's like good. It's because they don't care about fat.
No,
yeah,
you're supposed to have a
good.
Ton of fat and just no carbs.
I think fat is good, but it just depends on where it's coming from. Like, avocado is great.
Yeah, I had some guac.
Yeah.
Got some guac on there. Cheese.
Dairy for me.
Pico de gallo.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
It's a crazy life
a
we
pod.
Live.
Yeah. I swear to God, I will
just
never
about
talk
food.
About this again.
I'm
it's
so
only because it's day
sorry.
Three. I promise you guys, I will never bring this up again.
I mean, to be
I
fair, I did also talk to you about it. So it's both of our faults. We'll never talk about dieting or food.
We'll never speak about
again.
This again.
We will never eat again. We won't talk about food.
Unless I lose like 100 pounds and become a supermodel, then it's all I will talk about.
No. All thanks to keto.
Yeah. I'll become a keto spokesman.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
I forgot to take before and after pics. No, I'm just joking. It's probably not going to work because that's the kind of luck I have.
It's
like,
not
you
about
so
luck.
It's weird. You gained weight on keto. And I'm like, God damn it. Not again. Anyway, what have you been up to other than ketoing?
Well, I'm not ketoing. I'm trying to work on my own stuff. I was holding for a job that fell through, so, and I've been spending like I'm going to book a job, so I need to stop doing that.
What are you spending on?
I bought 2 jumpsuits.
That's so you. You have such a jumpsuit problem.
I know, it's really bad. And
I just go to your house just covered in jumpsuits. You're like, really I can't bad. Stop. Help
it's
me.
Really bad. And they're only like 2 colors, like black and green. Like I need, I need a problem.
You have a red one.
Oh, I do have a red one. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Your Rajneeshi one.
Oh my god. So I wore my red jumpsuit out to a movie in the Arclight Hollywood, very close by, and there's this account on Instagram apparently called the Rajneesh of Silver Lake or something, or like the
LA Rajneesh.
Yeah,
or something, like
something
that.
About Silver Lake and the Rajneesh Param or whatever. And
if you don't, that's from Wild Wild Country.
Yes.
It's the like cult-ish religion.
And all the believers in this cult wear red or like a warm tone all over. And my jumpsuit is all red. And I somehow ended up on this page because my friend thought it was so hilarious. And I scroll down and I see myself in my jumpsuit from the back. It was 100% me, my shoes, my hair. It was violating. That is violated.
So something that would happen to you that you're like, wait, what the fuck?
Oh, yeah.
That's me.
Yeah, that's it was funny. A weird moment.
That's my favorite thing.
Thank you.
When you were like, wait, it's me.
I mean, I no one told me to go look for myself. I was
just
like on Instagram.
Yeah, because it's a photo from you from behind, so you wouldn't know it's you unless you're looking at a photo of yourself and be like, that's my body.
Yeah. Like, those are my shoes. That's me slouching and standing weird, like, waiting for my friends to get out of the bathroom.
Like, only your, like, closest of friends would be like, that's Shireen.
Yeah,
if someone who's just scrolling.
Yeah, I sent it to only the person that was there with me that night, and he was like, oh, that's...
Wow.
That's weird.
That's you.
Yeah, so...
You are you.
But I'm not in a cult, despite what the Instagram says.
Wait, Shireen. Shireen did say she'd be a Sheila.
I mean, she's a badass.
That's so funny to me.
Who
do you still
would
wear
be
that
a
around?
Sheila?
No, no, no. I would totally be a Sheila as well. Come on, Sheila's the most badass.
Yeah. I've worn it since, but like, I'm definitely self-conscious in Silver Lake or just anywhere. I mean, I wasn't even in Silver Lake. I was in Hollywood.
Are you getting, like, paranoid? Like, are you taking a photo of me?
It's just weird.
Like, I don't know you.
Honestly, no. Social media has gotten really, like, it's made me really paranoid. Like, I'll see someone's phone out and I'll just assume they're, like, even, like, a stranger if I'm walking across the street. Like, this one time I was wearing, like, a weird outfit, I guess.
Yeah.
And I swear to God, someone took a photo of me from their car. Like,
really?
And I was so mad and I felt so weird and I don't know. Maybe it was in my head too. Maybe I'm just really paranoid and I think everyone's focusing on me and nothing is really about me. But like, social media has made me so paranoid because I do it all the time too. Like, I'll see someone, like, I don't know. Actually, I don't take pictures of strangers very much. I take pictures of, like, their animals.
Yeah, I do that.
Does that count?
Yeah. Well, I mean, animals are different, I think. People, if you're just blatantly looking at someone being like, you're weird looking, so
I'm
taking a photo of you.
Like, it's just me. I always hated, like, the people of Walmart or whatever, like, those things that made fun of people. Yeah. Like, it always rubbed me the wrong way because it feels mean.
The only one that makes sense is, like, people of Russia.
I remember that.
They're already, like, screwing with us so much. It's okay to, like...
It's okay to have little jabs. Yeah. And I've been to Russia, so it's all untrue.
Are they weird?
I mean, they're
looking.
No, but my point is, social media is weird.
A shit show.
Yeah, it's a shit show, man. But speaking of, the last thing I will say before we can move on is, in my downtime because I'm not working, I'm trying to make more projects. And yesterday, I had this idea because I used to do this thing where I would record my voice reading my poems out loud and then make little videos to accompany it. And I haven't done it in a long time. The few that I made, I took offline because I thought they were stupid. But I'm going to bring it back. And I made one yesterday with a new poem that I wrote in May. And I put like a little 30-second clip on my Instagram and my Twitter. So go check it out if you want. And it's me and my poetry and incorporating it with filmmaking. And there's footage of me as a 2-year-old. So
that's cool.
I'm a cutie.
Yeah. You're a cutie. I saw it. It's really cool.
Yeah, I'm trying to.
I did not watch with audio because I think I was in something.
I mean, it's really just my voice. You're not missing much. You hear it right now all the time.
I did want to tell you a social media creep thing. Someone who someone who's friends with someone in Daily Zeitgeist, one of the hosts, I don't know exact details, I can't remember, they took a photo of me out shopping in Venice, like from my back, and sent it to Miles Gray of Daily Zeitgeist, and he sent it to me, and it was like all within like 15 minutes
of
me like having been to that place and it getting to him and that coming back to me. And that was truly horrifying because I was like, what the fuck? There was only like 5 people in that store. Like,
I hate that.
Who the fuck knew who I was? And I didn't recognize anyone in the store because obviously I would know.
Is that what it's like to be famous? Just be like,
that's so creepy. It's so creepy.
Damn.
It is really violating. You're like, first of all, like, I'm not anyone for you to be taking photos of, to be sending to someone else to send back to me.
Yeah. When I saw myself on Instagram, I was like, I feel like taking advantage of. I was not prepared for this. I look very slouchy and I don't know.
Yeah, it was also from my backside as well.
Yeah.
Luckily, it wasn't posted anywhere. It was just sent back to me.
But that's still creepy as fuck.
Yeah, it was really creepy. I'm like buying things. I don't even know. I think it was like right before Mother's Day. I'm like buying soap or something. I don't know. Never again am I leaving my home.
The only good thing about social media, though, is my poem video, which you should watch. So, on another note, though, let's move on.
Poem video.
Yeah, I'm trying to make more stuff because I will go crazy if I don't.
I understand. Yeah. So, in this episode, I'm going to speak a first, and that's how I speak now.
The whole time.
I'm going to talk about sanctions in Iran and random, kind of not all random but some random things that are there's like serious shortage of. So recently there's been an aggressive and background. Iran sanctions have hit Iran again ever since the U.S. have pulled out of the Iran nuclear deal. So they're hit with sanctions again, and if you know anything, like, Iran and the U.S. have a terrible relationship and it's very hard
to say the least
to get things into the country, like parts, like anything to make things new. Like, they can't build new planes. Like, it's very hard. Like, they still have some deals with like European companies, but even them, they are being like aggressively bullied by the US to like cut off ties with Iran, which sucks because everyone there is like trying to survive and they're just regular people trying to live their lives. They just happen to be under this government. So parents are now like dealing with a shortage of baby diapers. There's been a 70% fall in the value of the national currency, which is the rial, in the past year. And everything now, like basic goods, commodities, are now very expensive.
Wow.
So, which is crazy because there's like this expansion of missile capabilities for defense purposes, which are currently a top priority in like the country's like top economic and political leaders. So like, They no one could get diapers, but apparently a ton of missiles are being made. So so the head of Manufacturing Association, they warned that 10 factories that produce disposable diapers are on the verge of closure because of shortage of raw materials. And so like all the companies that like need these absorbent diapers, like the materials to make them, it's all stuck in customs. They can't come through because of, you know, sanctions. And that's according to Syed Hossein Dokmehchi, who is the who's a part of the semi-official ILNA news agency. And so, like, replacing locally made diapers with foreign made ones is not really an option for Iran, because like everything's expensive and there's a high unemployment rate, and you know, there's like insane corruption in the government, so it's not like you can really like work your way up and make a lot of money and like pay for import diapers into your country so you can have something to put your fucking children's butthole on. And yeah, so like the sanctions were reimposed on Iran in early August, and it's basically caused a huge like currency crash. And in November, oil exports are going to get sanctioned as well. So that's like even more money being lost by Iran. And other people said that people can use cloth diapers for children, but what are they supposed to do about like grown-ups who need diapers?
Oh, shit.
And so like millions of women are reportedly, they're saying that they're affected because the absorbent sanitary pads are getting difficult to find. And there's this video that I'm going to post on our footnotes of this woman showing like shelves in the store and there's like nothing. like everyone has bought out all the pads basically, and there's just like one or two like sprinkled around.
It's like a zombie apocalypse.
Yeah, it's like when we all needed it's like a period apocalypse, and we all needed pads, and now there's no pads left.
Damn.
So, and then a lot of like the you know, everything is being increased in price, and like businessmen are like hoarding stuff so they can like
sell it
for even more profit from like panicked citizens, you know, to be like, rude. Oh well, you know, if you want this, you got to pay more because there's not really much
fucking
of it.
Con men.
Yeah, they're all con men. As my dad says, kolabeza, like, to, that's far, how do you translate? This is not going to translate to make any sense, but like, kolabeza, which is basically like, put a hat over someone's head to like, trick them, like, to, it doesn't translate.
Yeah, no, I think I know what you're trying to say, though. It's like, they pull the blind on, or like, they pull a fast one on you.
Yeah.
And for, kind of.
Yeah, so they, like, put the kola, which is the hat, over your eyes so you can't see that they're, like, tricking you, basically. That's what my dad always says. Iran's all these hat placers on your heads, and they're all trying to trick you. It makes more sense in Farsi.
You guys do love your hats, I will say that.
We love our hats.
Yeah.
So, Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khomeini, he's blamed all the foreign enemies, he accuses them of economic sabotage to, of course, create, you know, discontent in the Iranian society. He says, in some cases, it's not profiteering. It's sabotage. Imagine all of a sudden in Tehran or other major cities, baby diapers become scarce. This is happening. It's real. Which is like, yeah, fool, maybe pay attention to your people. Okay. Right. So Iran's economy is fucked. And so because of that, all the people, in the actual citizens, they're upset because the country pays more attention to like outside wars with like Syria.
Making missiles, and that's their priority.
Making missiles, exactly. Like dealing with defense and not their actual people. So there's been like anti-establishment demonstrations all over the country from like, there was about like 80 cities and towns in late December and early January, and they were followed by like more sporadic protests in late July and early August in about a dozen cities. So people are noticing it. Like there was droughts where there's no water in like southern Iran. Like people are really struggling. All right. So one cabinet official, Mahmoud Vaizi, said, on the other hand, we ask business owners and tradesmen to be more fair in setting prices. We expect our people and also our business owners to take each other into consideration so that we can pass through these very difficult times together, which obviously is not happening because the Iranians are being shady. And so two Iranian lawmakers recently pointed the finger at the state policies and urged that Iranians be given a greater say in their state's affairs, which, you know, probably won't happen anytime soon. People's lives are getting harder and harder. Unfortunately, the Islamic Republic has faced the world with a negative view since the beginning of 1979 revolution. This negative view has caused tensions both in internal and external relations. And that is from lawmaker Gholamreza Haydari, who is in parliament. And then another member of parliament, Parvana Salashuri, said that while the rial is now among the world's most worthless currencies, Iranians are also struggling with other issues that include corruption, hoarding, poverty, prostitution, and a lack of freedoms that result in the arrest of activists on a daily basis. So a lot of shit's going on. These sanctions are literally choking people. Like, they can't live. They're turning to all this other fucked up shit going on. And, you know, and Iran has no interest in dealing with activists, so they get arrested. Apparently, thousands of people were said to have been detained by security forces in the streets, unrest and other protests since December. Salashuri, she also called for the release of political prisoners, including opposition figures that have been under house arrest since 2011. She also said she called for the freedom of press and friendly ties with other countries. And of course, those both lawmakers I mentioned before, Salashuri and Haydari, they they're like hardlining like lawmakers said that they are receiving their talking points from the country's enemies, so they're not being very nice.
Right,
they're just being like, where do you come off saying that our people need rights? Which is, you know, that's how it goes when you are run by a regime. So on top of that, the oil situation has become very tough. Iran faces potentially like a crushing loss of oil exports when the U.S. sanctions return in November. And it's Iran being Iran. They're sneaky. They got their hats to put on you. They're doing a bunch of like little, things to get around the embargoes. When it was faced its toughest international sanctions between 2012 and 2015, they came up with a bunch of creative solutions, including repainting and renaming ships and switching off their tracking devices so they could, like, get through.
Wow.
And then Samir Madani, who's co-founder of TankerTrackers.com, who monitors the oil trade, said, "We find those tankers quite often leaving and entering Iran in a covert fashion with their transponder turned off. We spot them through satellites. I'd say several vessels a month." So, of course, analysts, they expect, like, that kind of behavior to ramp up when U.S. sanctions on Iran's oil industry come back on November 5th. So they will be pulling some sneakies. So the U.S. pressure has already caused a 24% drop in Iran's sales between May and August, and that's according to Bloomberg. And the biggest surprise has come from, like, Asian buyers who've like, basically cut off buying oil. So there was a 35% drop-off by China and 49% drop-off by India, according to the Eurasia Group Consultancy. And they say, like, wider geopolitics are at play, that India is looking to deepen their strategic ties with the U.S. and China is wishing to avoid a fresh spat with its, like, already, like, bitter trade dispute with Washington over the, like, tariffs.
Mm-hmm.
So Iran was exporting 2.7 million barrels of oil per day in May, but that is already down to 2.1 million. So the Eurasia Group says that they predict that the country's sales will fall about further to, like, 0.9 million barrels a day. So, like, overall, they'll be, like, from 2.1 down to, like, 1.2 million barrels by November, which is a lot.
That's a lot in that amount of time.
Yeah, that's a loss of $2 to $2.5 billion.
Wow.
A month at current prices. So, but they say, like, Washington's goal of reducing Iran's oil sales to zero is unrealistic, because Iran has the fourth largest reserves, and many countries, like, in Asia, they rely on its supplies and have refineries designed for its particular flavor of, like, how they sell.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I mean, it's like, they have all the oil.
Yeah. Like,
give me a break. So, and then, because, like, Iran is, like, shady, they said that if they can at least get their oil to a friendly port, then it can be blended with oil from somewhere else and resold. So that's, like, another little tactic they want to try and do. So according to Thys van de Graaf, who's an assistant professor of international politics at the University of Ghent, said, "Iran played a cat and mouse game last time and will probably do so again." So one thing they can do to be shady is that they can block the vital Strait of Hormuz, through which, like, a third of the world's seaborne oil passes every day.
Whoa.
So they can just shut it down. And then they themselves can move its main oil terminal out of the Gulf to a port in the Oman Sea so that its tankers would no longer need to pass through the strait, giving it more, like, ability to disrupt supplies. So basically, they can shut down the Strait of Hormuz, and then go around themselves so then it doesn't fuck with theirs, but it
Holy
fucks with everyone
shit.
Else. So,
desperate times.
Yeah, desperate times means you act a fucking fool.
Yeah.
So, it's hard. And, like, the EU says they're working with Iran to, you know, get the nuclear deal back together, even though, like, Washington hates it. Like, it just Trump hates it. Yeah. I guess we'll find out over time, like, what's going to happen with these, like, sanctions and how it's going to affect Iran even more. So
that's, I mean, it just, it's so, this is how bad things start. Like, you make people so desperate that they turn to things like, I don't know, conning other people, prostitution, and all, like, it's so unfortunate because you don't know what you're capable of until you are so desperate.
Yeah.
And
that's exactly where Iran is being pushed to.
Yeah.
Like, they're going to start fucking with other people.
Yeah.
Because they're, like, being strangled.
Damn.
It's crazy.
The U.S. is dumb as fuck.
There's no pads. Yeah. And they don't have tampons there. Yeah, they only have pads because tampons are like almost
like not like it's like very, very extreme Muslim people are like it's against
our
religion. You
can't put something inside you like that.
Yeah, it's not okay. I was the first. Actually, I don't know if I. Well, like, whatever. I was the first one out of my sisters to start using tampons, and I convinced them both and my mom to be like, "This is amazing." I was in college. Yeah. This is amazing. Why haven't we done this before? And like, I remember my roommate at the time, like, she was like this white girl that went to my high school. She like walked me through the whole thing because I had never done it before.
Yeah.
And I changed my family's life. So tampons are fine, you guys. TMI.
It's okay. On that note, we are going to take a quick commercial break. And we are back.
We're back. And it's my turn.
It is. Tell me everything.
Well, if yours was a downer, mine's also a downer. So this is just a great peppy episode for you guys. But this is a very important topic that's not getting enough coverage. So please pay attention, and I hope you spread the awareness because this is disturbing as fuck.
Oh, no.
So, on August 28th, China declared Islam a contagious disease, and it quarantined 1 million Muslims.
Wow.
Let me get into this. So, China is among the most ethnically homogeneous large countries in the world, meaning their ethnicity is all usually one type of population. So 91% is Han Chinese in China. And the ruling Communist Party considers China, this homogeneousness and social cohesion to be the pillars of its strength. And this also accounts for the potent like rationalizations for discrimination among ethnic minorities and authoritarian rule. So they take a lot of pride in the fact that they're all mostly one type of ethnicity. But in the territory of Xinjiang in northwest China, this is a home to a large population of predominantly Muslim Turkish ethnic groups, one ethnic group. And I looked this up how to pronounce this. I really apologize if I'm butchering it again, but it's spelled U-I-G-H-U-R-S. And from what Google and YouTube tells me, it's pronounced Uyghurs. So I'm going to go with that. But so this area in northwest China is home to these individuals, which is, again, a Muslim Turkish ethnic group. And the Chinese government has long worried that they would attempt to establish an independent homeland in the region, which they commonly call East Turkestan. In 2009, ethnic riots in Xinjiang, they claimed hundreds of lives. So to combat the impression that the Uyghurs have any cause for wanting their own separate state, let alone deploying violence to achievement, the government has decided to declare Islam a, quote, ideological illness. And they are quarantined 1 million Uyghurs. They're calling them re-education camps. And according to an estimate from the United Nations, which I'll get into later, they discuss in interviews how former inmates from these camps say that they were made to renounce their faith, sing Communist Party songs, consume pork, drink alcohol, and other reports suggest that some, quote, ideologically sick people, in their words, have been tortured and killed. Just keep in mind that if you're Muslim, eating pork is not, it's not halal, so it's not kosher. If you're Jewish, it's the same idea. You're not supposed to eat pork, you're not supposed to drink alcohol. It's pretty disgusting that they're doing this to these people. So, at first, Beijing was content to reserve its concentration camps for suspected radicals, but as The Atlantic's Sigal Samuel explains, they eventually decided that this group's ideology, aka being Muslim, was so destructive and contagious it was best to quarantine them immediately upon the slightest apparent symptom. Like, for example, a long beard on a male's face. That was a symptom. And then to the West, China insists that its re-education camps are more vocational in their schools. But Samuel notes again that Beijing offers a more forthright account of its intentions to its Chinese constituents. The Communist Party explained its policy in an official recording, which I will quote right now. It's pretty disturbing. But they said in this recording to the Communist Party, or the Communist Party is describing this to its constituents. Members of the public who have been chosen for re-education have been infected by ideological illness. They have been infected with religious extremism and violent terrorist ideology, and therefore they must seek treatment from a hospital as an inpatient. There is always a risk that the illness will manifest itself at any moment, which would cause harm to the public. serious harm. That is why they must be admitted to a re-education hospital in time to treat and cleanse the virus from their brain and to restore their normal mind. Being infected by religious extremism and violent terrorist ideology and not seeking treatment is like being infected by a disease that has not been treated in time, or like taking toxic drugs. There is no guarantee that it will not trigger and not affect you in the future.
Wait, they're saying Islam is a mental illness?
Yes. Having gone through re-education and recovered from ideological illness, from the ideological disease, doesn't mean that one is permanently cured. So, after completing the re-education process in the hospital and returning home, they must remain vigilant, empower themselves with correct knowledge, strengthen their ideological studies, and actively attend various public activities to bolster their immune system, which just means, like, you support our government and not your religion. To this point, international outcry, so that's the quote that I just read. So up till now, the international outcry over China's mass repression of its Muslim population has been relatively tame, which is absurd to me because this is just disgusting.
That's wild.
As Business Insider notes, the governments of many Muslim-majority countries have declined to express public opposition for fear of jeopardizing their access to Chinese capital, especially the infrastructure loans that Beijing has provided as part of its, quote, One Belt, One Road initiative. So it has its foot in a lot of countries, China, and they're afraid of messing that up, which is fucked up because what they're doing is disgusting. Yeah. I know I keep saying that, but I'm just dumbfounded. I'm so shocked that this is just going on and let's become a thing. But people are good out there and they exist. So the UN on August 31st accused China of holding more than a million Muslims in a secret web of detention centers. And the detainees China denies the very existence of the detainees.
Weird.
And as many as 1 million Uyghurs and other Muslim people who human rights activists say are being held in a vast web of detention camps in Western China, China denies that they even exist.
What?
So a United Nations committee in Geneva examined China's record on racial discrimination and rebuffed Beijing's denials of the re-education camps and called on it to acknowledge the existence of the facilities and release those who are being detained. In a report released Thursday, the committee dismissed China's justifications that it faced a terrorist problem in the Xinjiang region as nothing more than a, quote, pretext for detaining minority Muslims. So China is basically saying they have a terrorist problem when really that's just a front because they want to detain minority Muslims who have done nothing wrong. A bipartisan group of 17 U.S. lawmakers, meanwhile, they're urging the Trump administration to sanction Chinese officials and companies allegedly involved in the detention centers. During hearings on China's human rights record by the UN Committee on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination, Gay McDougall, an American human rights attorney and committee vice chairwoman, she cited credible reports that more than 1 million Muslim people had been detained and said that the government had been turning, quote, into something that resembles a massive internment camp that is shrouded in secrecy. The UN committee also expressed alarm over, quote, numerous reports of detention of large numbers of ethnic groups, of ethnic Uyghurs and other minority Muslims held often for long periods with no communication, without being charged or tried under the pretext of countering terrorism and religious extremism. The Chinese Foreign Ministry spokeswoman, Hua Chunying, rejected the accusations, saying they had, quote, no factual basis. She says, as for certain counterterrorism and stability maintenance preventative measures, I think internationally this has been in general use by lots of countries. And she said that there is no such thing as re-education centers or counter-extremism training in Xinjiang. But it noted that this region did face a terrorist problem, and it claims that this ethnic minority was being held in... it says that the claims were all untrue, basically. They deny everything. Even though there's literally Google map images that the UN sourced that shows these vast areas where they're being held. And China's response to the committee, which was delivered by China's representative Hu Linhe, it did mention what it called, quote, vocational and employment training centers, where people convicted of minor offenses were sent to, quote, acquire the employment skills and legal knowledge with a view of assisting in the rehabilitation and reintegration. But they offered no further details, and they never they refused to tell us how many people were at these centers or whether they had been held against their will or not. So, the UN community keeps calling on China to provide more detailed information on the number of people being detained in the last 5 years in this region and the duration and grounds for their detention. It also wants China to eliminate the travel restrictions it has affecting minority Muslims and hold government officials accountable for racial profiling of these detained communities. The 17 lawmakers include, for once, I like this man, Senator Marco Rubio, Christopher H. Smith, and a couple others of individuals that are urging the Trump administration to sanction companies that are profiting from these detention centers and building them. And yes. So.
How is this happening in
2018? It makes me very disgusted. In a letter from the lawmakers, they said, Muslim ethnic minorities are being subjected to arbitrary detention, torture, and egregious restrictions on religious practice and culture, with digitized surveillance systems so pervasive that every aspect of daily life is monitored. The Chinese spokeswoman, on the other hand, said China's human rights record is far better than the United States. And she says, if China's policies on ethnic minority groups and the equal rights enjoyed by them are viewed without bias and prejudice, the conclusion will be drawn that China's policies and record in this regard are actually far better than the U.S. These U.S. lawmakers have no right to make these unwarranted accusations on ethnic minority issues in China, and I would like to advise those U.S. lawmakers who are paid by taxpayers' money to focus on doing their job and serving Americans instead of poking their noses in other countries' domestic affairs, acting like some kind of, quote, human rights judge to make groundless accusations or even threaten to impose unreasonable sanctions.
Are you kidding me?
Nope. That is what she said. So again, just to recap a little bit before I get into what the U.S. is trying to do with these sanctions. The U.S. declared Islam a religious contagious disease and an ideological infection, and it quarantined more than 1 million Muslims. They were made to renounce Islam, consume pork, drink alcohol, and at times tortured and, unfortunately, killed. So as of September 10th, the U.S. is weighing sanctions against Chinese officials over Muslim detention camps, and human rights advocates and legal scholars say the mass detentions in the northwest region of Xinjiang, the northwest region of China, are the worst collective human rights abuse in China in decades. Since taking power in 2012, President Xi Jinping has steered China in a hard authoritarian course, which includes increased repression of ethnic groups in western China, notably the Uyghurs and the Tibetans. On Sunday, Human Rights Watch released a detailed report that concluded the violations were, quote, on a scope and scale not seen in China since 1966 through 76 in the Cultural Revolution. The report based the interviews with 58 former residents of Xinjiang and recommended that other nations impose targeted sanctions on Chinese officials, withhold visas, and control exports of technology that could be used for abuses. These Chinese Muslims in the camps are forced to attend daily classes, denounce aspects of Islam, study mainstream Chinese culture, and pledge loyalty to the Chinese Communist Party. And again, some of them have described torture by the security officers. The Chinese officials, on the other hand, have labeled the process, quote, transformation through education, or, quote, counter-extremism education. But they have not acknowledged that the large groups of Muslims are being detained. So, kind of like
they're just like lying.
Yes. But the discussions over the mass detention in this region highlight that American efforts on issues that diverge from the president's priorities. And because Trump has rarely made statements criticizing foreign governments for human rights abuses or anti-liberal policies. And in fact, he has praised the authoritarian leaders, including Mr. Xi. And the Trump administration has confronted China over economic issues, and the two countries are in the middle of this very big trade war, but he has said nothing about the abuses by its security forces. Senator Marco Rubio said, the scale of it, it's massive. the Muslim detention centers, he said, it involves not only intimidating people on political speech, but also a desire to strip people of their identity, their ethnic identity, religious identity, on a scale that I'm not sure we've ever seen in the modern era. The ethnic Uyghurs are a Turkic speaking group that is mostly Sunni Muslim, with a population around 11 million. They are the largest ethnic group in this region, and some of the desert oasis towns and the villages that they consider their homeland are being emptied out as security officers force them to leave and go to detention centers for weeks or months. There is a Uyghur American journalist who works for Radio Free Asia, Gulchehra Hoca. She's financed by the U.S. government, and she said that Radio Free Asia is financed by the U.S. government. She said that at a congressional hearing in July, 24 of her family members were missing, including her brother. And she says, I hope and pray for my family to be released, but I know even that when that happens, they will still be under constant threat.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's a Chinese law student in Canada, Sean Zhang, who compiled satellite images that show the scale of the detention centers. And in their demand last month, Rubio and other lawmakers urged officials in the state Treasury Department to impose sanctions on these Chinese companies that have profited from building the camps. So there are people in our administration that are trying, people that I wouldn't have expected, like Marco Rubio. But for many years, Chinese officials have talked about the need to suppress what they call terrorism, separatism, and religious extremism in Xinjiang. In 2009, ethnic violence has been soaring in the region, and security forces carried out mass repression in response, but large-scale construction of the camps, which now hold as many as 1 million people, did not begin until the arrival of Chen Qingao, who became the party chief of this region in August 2016, after a stint in the Tibetan autonomous region. So basically, this started over two years ago. And the congressional letter singles out Mr. Chen as among the seven individuals, Chinese officials, who would be sanctioned. So, I mean, that's the gist of what I have to say. But this issue was raised in July at the first international minister-level forum on global religious freedom, over which Mr. Pompeo and Vice President Mike Pence presided. Ahead of it, Mr. Pompeo, he wrote an op-ed that listed this group among several groups suffering religious persecution. Mm. He says, these episodes and others like them are abhorrent. In a statement to the Times, the State Department official said they are deeply troubled by the Chinese government's worsening crackdown on Muslims. Credible reports indicate that individuals sent by Chinese authorities to detention centers since April 2017 number at least in the hundreds of thousands, possibly millions. So the world is just doing fine.
Oh, God.
That's happening in China. It makes me really lose faith in everything that I already had little faith in. But just mull that over in your head a while we go to a quick commercial break.
I've mulled and I'm horrified.
Yep, it's horrifying.
I don't get how this is going on like right now. No one's even remotely acknowledging that it's happening.
It's like they're concentration camps.
Yeah.
And people were just like not even talking about it. Like it's been going on for a while and we're just hearing about it.
Like, that's absurd.
It's just disgusting. How are humans like this? It makes me so upset to be a part of this animal.
What are these communists doing?
It just makes me so horrified and terrified for those people over there.
I don't want to live anymore.
Stay.
How are they allowed? You can't take people!
You know, I was thinking about it, and it's, I mean, not really. It's almost a century since like Hitler came onto the scene.
That's crazy. Now he's back, and, baby, and in full force.
Yeah, his ways to control people are still in effect, obviously. You know, just put him in a building and kill him.
Yeah, just put him in a
Jesus Christ.
It's really gross.
Also, like, what? Why does it matter?
Yeah, like how does their existence affect you? That's what I don't understand about people that are closed-minded and like unable to accept people that are different than they are, whether it's like a gay person or a Muslim or a Jewish person. Like, how does their existence affect you? It doesn't.
Mm-mm. I don't want.
No. So I'm sorry that I kind of stuttered my way through that, and I'm very sorry about mispronouncing everything that I did. But I am trying, you guys, all the links and the references so you can see how these things are spelled because I butchered them. They'll be in the footnotes, which are just in the description of this video, or this podcast, rather.
Oh, boy. Well, on that note, I thought we could talk about our favorite desserts that our families have made us over the years.
I like this change. I like this change of topic.
I'm so craving sugar and I can't have it, so I figured I might as well talk about it.
I like the way you think.
What did your parents make, like, dessert wise at home? Or like, what did they bring into the house from whether like the Arab shop down the street or whatever the heck?
Well, there's this thing called balorie, which it translates into being like glassy, I guess, but it's like a type of baklava that I really like. And the pastry is very like thin and crisp and delicious. They also have like espadrille de cajou, which is like, it's literally translated into like cashew fingers, but it's just like, it's like the little rolls of baklava that just have, they're filled with little cashews. They're so good. I just like the tops of all the baklava. Like, I usually like just the light pastry part.
Yeah.
But my dad is obsessed with knafe, which is this very, like, dairy, cheesy thing. I can't really eat it because it would fuck me up, but...
Is your dad, he doesn't suffer from the lactose intolerance?
No. It's my mom and the rest of us.
Oh, your mom does?
Yeah. Hmm. But my mom makes the best desserts. She's truly a gem. And honestly, like, during Ramadan, we eat a lot of, I don't fast anymore, but we eat a lot of dates. And, like, yeah, we'll just, like, stuff walnuts or almonds in these dates. That, like, my mom will soak the walnuts or the almonds, then she'll stuff them. And those are, like, delicious.
Yeah.
And me being an American garbage person, I put peanut butter in them. And it's the best thing I've ever had in my life.
I've never thought of that, but I'm, like, very
You intrigued. Have to.
Peanut butter and dates?
It's so fucking good.
Wait, what?
It's like just the best snack. I love it so much. Really, everyone good. Out there, do it now.
That's like the like Islamic version of like putting like peanut butter on like celery.
What about you? What's your desserts and your
so
world?
Like I okay, so there's a few. The thing is, like, Iranian desserts, they're so weird.
Mm-hmm.
So one, they're either super, super sweet or they're just like powder. So there's like the zulbia, which is it's like a funnel cake, but it's not. It's like deep fried, but it's like, so it's like, it feels like it's all sugar. It's kind of like a churro. It's like syrupy kind of. And so it's like a syrupy funnel cake and it's deep fried and it's soaked with kind of like rose water saffron syrup.
Ooh.
So it kind of comes out to like these little like pillows of fried, like, I don't know, just sugar. Just like fried sugar. And then they also like fry them into like designs, like little, like, I don't even know, like, it could look like a kind of like a Swedish rose cookie. Is that a thing? Did I just make that up?
Swedish rose cookie.
Let me. Oh, a rosette. A Swedish rosette cookie.
Let me look that up.
So it's kind of like how it has like a little. Actually, you know what? Growing up, my mom used to make, on special occasions, she would make us Swedish rosette cookies, even though they're not really Persian, but she just like liked the technique of like frying them.
I've never had that.
They're pretty good. They're very, like, they're like very wafy, like,
yeah.
And you put like powdered sugar on them, and they're really good.
That's funny because there's this thing I remember, it's called petit four, But it's just like a French thing, but it's basically these like small little sweets that you get in Syria or like in the Middle East, I'm sure, but they're usually covered in like, or they have like pistachios on top, or like you eat them with your chai or your tea. I also, like, my favorite breakfast growing up when I was in Syria was just like kake and chai, which just means like kake is like a sweet crunchy bread looking thing that you dip into your tea. And it's just so good, and that's like my favorite. And then there was also these like cakes that were like oh my god, what were they called? Lealina? Oh my god, they're so good. They're like
Lealina?
Yeah, they're like oh the night. That it translates into being oh the night, but it's basically these cakes that looked like little windows, and they had like checkers, like red or green or like white and black, and we ate those like every day in the morning. Oh my god. But those are more just like, I think, inspired by like other countries, but they still were delicious.
Oh, that's cool. We also had like saffron and rose water and pistachio ice cream. Those are like the flavors.
Yeah,
it's like you wouldn't have normal flavors. Like you ate pistachio ice cream, you ate saffron ice cream, and you ate rose water ice cream.
Tell me, was your ice cream kind of like big and like in a block?
Yeah,
that's, and you like cut it up. That's what we, and we put it in like, were your cones like horizontal and flat?
I don't remember if we had cones. We always had like bowls. We never used cones.
And I don't know why, but only in Syria did I ever see these like flat horizontal cones, and you would like slice off a piece of this block ice cream that was like white and like creamy, and then you would stuff it into this cone.
I know, we didn't do that.
Yeah.
But it always came in like weird like containers.
Yeah. Yeah.
We also did like
rose water is a big one though.
Yeah, fucking rose water.
Yeah. Do you guys ever drink like berry juice? We call it toot.
No. Toot. Berry juice. I don't know.
It's like, I don't even know what kind of berry it is, really. It's just like, it's...
It sounds familiar, but yeah. I can't think like what it could be.
Yeah. We were talking about soda one episode, and I said I don't drink soda, but I did. There's a soda that's like berry flavored in Syria called Vinito or Vimto or so. Oh my god.
Yeah.
It is so good.
I like that.
It was just, it just reminds me of, I don't know.
That's cool.
Yeah.
We also did like saffron rice pudding, shulzad. It's so weird. You got like, my favorite thing was I got to like design, like they would give you cinnamon to put up top, and you can make your own designs up top. That was like truly where I flourished.
That's so cute.
Cinnamon Lulu, designs.
My little sister really loves rice porridge. It's called rizu halib. Also, I just realized I'm forgetting like my favorite thing ever. Well, one of my favorite things other than like baklava and like yummy things, but it's called mamul. And it's like, look like this kind of sometimes little like balls. And they have, sometimes they have powdered sugar, and so I usually don't like them with the sugar, but they're just stuffed with dates.
Yeah.
And like ground up dates, and sometimes pistachios too, but it's really yeah, like pistachio mamul, date mamul. It's so good. They're so just like, they're not too sweet. And they make them with these spoons that like, for the shape.
Yeah, yeah.
There's like these spoons.
They're like almost like weird old school style cookie cutters.
Yeah, exactly. But they're these like, they look like wooden spoons, but the head of them is just like a very intricate cookie design.
It's a mold.
Yeah, a mold. Yeah. Yeah, so you put this mamul dough in there, and then they're all the mamuls that I've seen are like that, so it's really cute. And they're so good.
That's
and
cool.
This. Do you guys have these?
We have stuff with pistachios on them.
No, this little guy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't think we have those specifically, but we have something similar.
I'm showing Anna this like little donut-looking thing with a pistachio in it. I thought this was one of the things that was... Oh, just shortbread. It's Armenian shortbread cookies. I didn't know they were Armenian until just now. I think they're Middle Eastern. But they're Middle Eastern shortbread cookies, and I love them.
Oh. We also did... Did you guys ever eat nazuk growing up?
What is that?
The nazuk. It's like Armenian, but like we grew up eating the nazuk. They're like little bread folds. But it's like sweet bread.
I've never seen that. I've never really seen that, but I don't know. Maybe I'm just like not aware of it.
Nazuk was really good. We ate that. And then we had like these little like kind of like pistachio brittle, like saffron pistachio brittle called Sohan. That was really good. They cut them really like small. And you could like eat little. And then of course there's gaz, which is like Persian nougat.
Yeah.
Yeah. With like pistachios.
Like the white stuff. Yeah. Yeah, we have that too.
Yeah, that was actually
what it's called though.
Yes, it's my least favorite. I don't know why. I don't like the texture.
It looks yummier than it is. It looks yummy, but when you eat it, it's like a letdown.
I have a ton of Gaz at home right now that I've had for like a year that I just cannot wrap my around. Like, it's also weird to like offer people because like your like regular American friends, like you're just like, please, I insist. And they're like, what the fuck is that? And you're like,
nougat.
It's like, you know.
Yeah.
Of course, and there's halva, which is.
Yeah, my mom and dad love halva.
I can take a bite, but it's too like.
It's too rich.
The texture is really weird for me.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it is very rich. It's like a dense paste. Yeah. That's what it is. It's like paste. And you're like, why are we eating paste?
Yes.
Yeah, I could never really get into halva, but my mom would always be like, eat the halva. And I'd be like, I don't fucking want to eat the halva.
Oh my God, I just keep thinking about those shortbread cookies. They're so good, you guys. They're like these mini little donuts, but they're not donuts, but they're shortbread cookies, and they have one lone pistachio in the center where the ends meet. They're so cute and yummy.
Aww.
But there's also, nuts, if you haven't noticed, are a big part of the Middle East. There's also this dish called namura, which is like an almond cake, and it looks like this. I don't know if you guys have this one.
It all looks like similar to what we have,
but it's like this almond dessert cake thing, and you bake it in a pan, and it's usually flavored with rose water or orange blossom water, and it's just really good with like tea or coffee. And also it's usually vegan because there's no milk in it.
That's good.
Other than, like, you can always add butter and stuff to it, but usually it's, like, oil. Namura is great. And it just has a cute name. Namura.
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 Wow. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed that walk down dessert memory lane.
I really want all of this stuff now. I'm just looking at photos.
I know. I'm just looking at photos as well. Like, fuck my leg.
Oh, I just miss going to Syria and just, like...
Baklava is also big in my life growing up.
Well, yeah, I think it's big in all of that region for sure.
So delicious.
I mean, it's like the only thing I think Americans... this is Leonina. This is what I'm talking about.
Oh, nice. I've never had that.
They're like little checker cakes. But I don't know. They're probably not from Syria, but just like Petit Fort, how it's like originally from the French, but the French also occupied us, so we're allowed.
Also, the thing is, you sprinkle pistachio cut up special on everything in Iran. Like all crushed pistachio everything. On them.
On namura, on knafe, everything has crushed green powder, which is not wasabi, not matcha, it's pistachio.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy? Why do we do that?
I'm telling you, nuts are a big deal for
insane.
Us.
Insane.
We love our nuts.
Yeah, we really do. Okay. Well, we should wrap it up. Because if I keep talking about sweets, I'm gonna go full off keto. Okay. I'm gonna get back into my deep sugar addiction. Yes, thank you for listening. Rate and review us. We need some reviews. 5 stars. You don't even have to review us, just 5 stars, man. Like,
just 5 stars.
Reviews are good though.
Yeah, we'll read it on the air one day.
Yes, so you can find us on ethnicallyambiguouspod.com, where you can find our footnotes on our episode descriptions and all that good stuff. We're on Twitter at ethnicallyamb, AMB. We're on Instagram at ethnicallyambig, AMBIG. I'm on Twitter at...
Who are you?
I'm on Twitter at Anahosnie, Anahosnieh. You can find me complaining about struggling with keto on there.
And I'm on Twitter at ShereenY, ShereenWhy. And on Instagram, I'm at ShiroHero, ShereoHero. Go follow me and watch my little poetry video. And you can see my little toddler self waddling around.
Toddlers for likes.
Yeah, hashtag toddler for likes.
Yes.
Also, if you want to support us and buy our merch, you can go to teepublic.com/ethnicallyambiguous. Our store URL is also in both of our Twitter and Instagram bios. You can take a photo of your shirt when you're wearing it, or whatever you buy, a mug or a pillow or anything, take a photo with it. And we can share it on our medias, and we can grow this fam together. Tell your friends.
Yes, and we have new designs up.
Yeah!
We added the 2 different teacups, tea glasses. Mm-hmm. And now we have the crescent moon, which you really have to look closely, but the moon is made out of Arabic and Farsi saying ethnically ambiguous. Mm-hmm. I personally struggle with this because I thought it looked like a tribal tattoo for a very long time.
No, I'm into it. I think it looks kind of badass. And
yeah, moons, try and figure out which side's Farsi and which side's Arabic.
And moons are also a big part of us, so join the moon sluts. But what was I going to say? Oh, yeah, in Arabic, ethnically ambiguous translates into literally meaning mysterious origin, so that's badass.
Yeah, I think ours is like obscure ethnic.
Yeah, that's just like a whole other level of badassery. But yeah.
So, until next time, you gonna bite that ass?